James chapter 3 this evening. James chapter 3 and verses 1 through 12 are the passage this evening. My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths, that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great, and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. Even so the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beast, and of birds, and of serpents, and of things in the sea is tamed, and hath been tamed of mankind, but the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Therewith bless we God, even the Father. Therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessings, blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Either a vine figs, so can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. And let's pray. Lord, help us tonight to, of course, receive your word, to receive it with meekness, the engrafted word which has the ability to save our souls. Lord, deal with us to whatever extent is necessary in our own lives about this matter. And I pray your help tonight in Jesus' name. Amen. It is interesting that in chapter 2, James has made the argument that there is saying faith and saving faith. And that saying faith is insufficient, inadequate. It is dead, like a body without a spirit. And then immediately in chapter 3, James turns his attention to the significance of words. So he is not discounting the importance of words, and he really hasn't gone off at a bit of a tangent. He is dealing with the subject matter of faith. And in this passage, in James chapter 3, in verses 1 through 12, we have the first really clear hint that this is a troubled church that is on the receiving end of this letter. We know that all of the epistles are what we call occasional. They're written for a reason. They're not just abstract, written theoretically, but that real people have real issues, and God is using his apostles and the inspiration of his Spirit to set forth God's view on things for all of his people in all time. In verses 1 and 2, James just introduces the subject matter by talking about the importance of words. My brethren, be not many masters. The word master is actually the word teacher. And this is one of the first hints that there is some problem there, because James seems to be addressing, and this will be really emerge when we get into chapter 4, that there appears to be some serious competition in the church for leadership and authority, that people are in the pursuit of various kinds of prominence. And so James here issues this cautionary statement, be not many masters, be not many teachers, do not be among those who are in the pursuit of this kind of authority, we tend to attach great prestige to those who teach. And we tend to invest them with great honor, those who teach. And one of the questions that is raised within the text is whether James is addressing only those who are teachers. But it doesn't seem so because of the way he expands his argument in verses 2 and 3. So I think that, and again, James is, you know, the best way that I, at least the way that I think of it, and I'm not sure that it's that I'm conveying it clearly, but James is not a book that really lends itself to being read bit by bit. And I don't mean taking a couple of sessions to read it. I mean reading it as if you can disconnect the pieces. James really rises and falls as a whole. He's always dealing with something that he has previously addressed. And so it appears that people with the wrong kind of attitudes are in pursuit of the wrong kind of preeminence. And when we get into chapter 4, it seems that they're going to be attempting to achieve their ends with the wrong kind of methodologies. And, of course, God has nothing good to say about that. So, I don't know that it's ever really, really been a huge problem among us at Westwood Heights, that people have jockeyed and vied and fought with each other and sought to be divisive over the issue of leadership. But it does appear to be something that is a real problem that God is dealing with through the book of James. So this becomes then kind of the segue into this section of the book. And James he's pointed out that there's two kinds of faith. He will talk about two kinds of words. He will talk about two kinds of wisdom. And he will just keep laying godliness versus satanic, right? Demonic, there's divine faith, demonic faith. There are divine speaking, demonic speaking. There's divine wisdom, there's demonic wisdom. We take sides. There's nothing neutral. We're either on the Lord's side or we're not, or we're on Satan's side. That's the only way that it can be. That's the only way that James sees the world. It's the only way that God sees the world. My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. Right? Some of you, it appears, I'm not saying some of you Westwood Heights, but as James writes, he's writing to people who he perceives to be all about the prestige of teaching, the authority of teaching, the preeminence that would come to being a teacher. And it appears that they have neglected to be cognizant of this, that they are going to receive the greater judgment. If there is any greater degree of prestige, and I don't think that there is this corollary, the greater level of judgment. And I think that is because, folks, those who teach Christian things, okay, and I'm not demeaning anybody that teaches in any kind of an academic setting, but those who are endeavoring to teach spiritual things are working with their words. I mean, that would be true of any teacher. Teachers work with their words. I'm teaching math, I'm teaching English, I'm teaching history, I'm teaching whatever it is I'm teaching. We're teaching the Bible. We are working with our words. And words are invested with great meaning. And those who do work with their words then are going to receive a greater level of judgment or condemnation. And I think that is simply because of the nature of the word. I mean, I don't really think that this is so. It's not that there are these various levels of judgment so that a guy can look and go, well, if I don't teach, then there's X quantity less demanded of me. I don't think that's it at all. I think it's this, right? If you're going to be the one doing all the talking, you're going to be doing more talking than other people, and all words have accountability. The more you say, the more you answer for, folks. This is one of the reasons that God prizes human silence. In the multitude of words, there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. The less we talk, the less we have to answer for, simply because the less we've said. And the more we said, the more we answer for. And you know, some people, they just talk. And they just talk, and they talk, and they talk. And Jesus said, you know, you're always on the clock when you're talking. Right? Every idle word. Every idle word. The weatherman was not nice to us today. I'm going to answer for that. Every idle word is being recorded by the Lord. Words matter because those who speak words are judged for those words. And words matter because, verse number 2, everybody offends with their words. It's not just that we are speaking X number of words out into the air that are all good, or X number of words that are mostly good and partially neutral. Verse number 2, for in many things we offend all. And he doesn't mean by that the, you know, that would ring a little weird to our ears. It would mean, we might interpret it to mean we offend everybody, but that's not what he is saying. What he is saying is we are all offenders in this. Everybody struggles with the words that they say. And the more of them you say, the more judgment you have. And when you take to yourself the role of the teacher, you have volunteered to say more words. So there is coming to you a greater judgment. And the word offend there, the idea is that we fall. We misspeak. We make errors. We make wrong judgments. We use our words to ascribe motives that are maybe not right, or to fill in gaps that are inaccurate. We're well-intentioned, but we just don't know what we're talking about. But that doesn't stop us from rendering a judgment. And so James concludes then in verse number 2, if any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man. Here's this idea again, right? Mature faith. Here is a complete package, able also to bridle the whole body. So James starts by talking about the importance of words, and then in verses 3 through 6, he makes the observation that small things have huge impact. Right? Because we tend to think of words as small things. Harmless conversations. I didn't mean anything. I didn't mean that. I didn't mean anything by what I said. This is the way we tend to explain our words. I was just joking. I was just talking. I was just letting my mouth run away with me. Whenever you read a word like behold, as you have there in verse number 3, we would probably say in our vernacular, look. That's really what the word means. It means to look. We don't say behold. We say look. We put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Verse number 4, behold the ships, which though they be so great and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. And the word listeth there is the King James word for wills, or has a mind. The governor steers the whole ship by turning the rudder. Even so, verse number 5, just like that, just like that, just like the bit and the bridle in the mouth of the big horse, just like the rudder in the helm of the big boat. So verse number 5, even so the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth. So our tongues are relatively small compared to the size of our bodies. That doesn't stop them from bragging things. And here's another one of those hints, folks, that all is not well in the church. Here is one of those hints that those who are coveting to be the masters are doing it in a sinful way. So our tongues are small things, but they start large fires. That's the point James is making. Small rudders move big boats. Small bridles rule big horses. Small words start large fires. Because, verse number 6, the tongue is a fire. The tongue is a spark always looking for fuel. James here goes off into this metaphorical language about the tongue. What is the tongue? It is a fire. It is an entire world of iniquity. In other words, how big is a small tongue? It's a whole world unto itself. It's its own galaxy. It's its own galaxy of ideas and heartache and sorrow and grief and malice and hatred and envy and vice. It is an entire world, verse number 6, of iniquity, of unrighteousness. So is the tongue among our members that it defileth the whole body, just like the rudder moves the whole boat and the bridle moves the whole horse. So the tongue defiles the whole man. All of this, folks, is James explaining how he can make the statement that he did in verse number 2, that if you can control your tongue, you're the complete package. How can I be the complete package by just being able to control my tongue? Well, because your tongue is like the bridle on a horse and it's like the rudder on a boat. And so the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members that it defileth the whole body and setteth on fire the course of nature. That word course there refers to actually a wheel, to something that is circular. And the word nature there is the word Genesis, the beginning. It is the wheel of fire on the, it is the, setteth on fire the wheel of the beginning. We spend our lives, folks, again, these are metaphorical language. Verse number 6 is filled with metaphorical language. Right? We spend our lives encircled with problems caused by our words. Boy, I wish I could get those words back. Man, I wish I'd never said that. Man, I'm sorry for the words that I said. We spend our lives encircled by word problems. And this is because, folks, that tongue has a demonic aspect to it. It is set on fire of hell. Where did that flame come from? Where did this consuming, defiling, carry along with us all of our lives problem come from? Not heaven, but hell. And James here is not being weird or goofy or mystical. He is just stating in a metaphorical way basic Bible truth, folks. Our flesh is energized by Satan. The world is energized by Satan. That brings us then to verses 7 through 12. Words are important, and even though they seem to be small things, they cause large problems, and we know that. And since our tongues are energized by Satan, they cannot be controlled simply by men, but must be controlled by God. Verse number 7, for every kind of beast and of birds and of serpents and of things in the sea is tamed and hath been tamed of mankind. We domesticate large animals. We work at domesticating wild animals. We control large animals. We put them in zoos. We put them on display. We use them in circuses. We manage them. And yet, verse number 8, an emphatic statement, the tongue can no man tame. I'm guessing you saw in the news that some guys were trying to find a place to smoke marijuana and they found an empty house, except it wasn't empty and it was a tiger. And so the officials came out and took the tiger and put it in a sanctuary. No tiger is more ferocious than our tongues. No wild beast is more savage than our words. The tongue can no man tame. We can line up the large elephants and make them obey us in the circus. We can put the big cats on the chair and make them jump through fiery hoops, but we cannot control our tongues. And this is because they are unruly. It is an unruly evil. It is something that cannot be restrained. This is the nature of our speech. It cannot be restrained. And if that's not bad enough, you add to it this in verse number 8, it is full of deadly poison. It is out of control and not for good. Right, and so in verses number 9 through 11, and again, one of the things that I would point out to you folks that is consistent all throughout James is in whatever problem he is addressing within this assembly to whom he is writing, he never takes the approach that Paul periodically takes, most clearly in the book of Galatians, in which James says, man, you guys have really made me nervous. Are you really saved? He never does that. He just kind of puts his head down and plows through this anguishing reality that it is possible for the people of God to act like lost people. And so in verses 9 through 11, he deals with something, folks, that can only be true of those who are saved. He is addressing the dual nature of the believer. And however kind the words of a lost person are, however sincere they are, however much kindness is the way that they are, and there are those people in the world, they don't have the two natures. They don't have God's nature. But we who are saved do. And therefore, these are the kind of things that are possible for believing people to do with their tongues. Verse number 9, therewith bless we God, even the Father. Again, he's not talking about just mouthing religious words. He's talking about genuinely believing people, genuinely blessing God. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. Same mouth. Same tongue. Sometimes beautiful words. Sometimes horrific words. Verse number 10, out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. It shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't, should it? We would all agree. I would agree with that. It shouldn't be that way. Well, then, Largent, what's the problem? The problem is my tongue refuses to be tamed, and sometimes I'd like to take it off the leash. Verse number 11, doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? And obviously, folks, what James is talking about here is saved people conducting themselves sinfully. And I would just point out to you, right, because James says, out of the same tongue we bless and curse, and it shouldn't be this way. But if you go back to Genesis chapter 3, that's exactly what God did. He cursed Satan. He promised the blessing of the Redeemer. But those were righteous judgments. James is not suggesting that it's a sin to use the tongue to make a right judgment. That's not his context. I don't even think he's thinking about that. He's thinking about the fact, again, to back up and look at this, that in this assembly, there are believing people who are treating other believing people in a horrific way because they have a selfish agenda. And again, I don't know that this has ever really been a large, wide-scale problem in Westwood Heights, something that would characterize the entirety of the assembly. It seems to be something that is that kind of an issue. When James writes, I rejoice that I don't know that that's ever been true of us, I suppose. On personal levels, perhaps it has been. But does a fountain, verse number 11, send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Right? Do any of us walk to the water cooler or the water fountain in the building, push the button, and say to ourselves, I wonder what the water will be right now? Good water or bad water? But that's the way that our tongue is. Verse number 12. Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Either a vine fig, so can no fountain. Both yield salt water and fresh. It's not possible for one kind of tree to produce a different kind of fruit. It shouldn't be that way in the life of a believer. Shouldn't be this way. And again, folks, we would all agree that it shouldn't be this way. So, right, as a minimum, we want to be particularly attentive to the words we speak and the things we say and the way we talk about other people. And James really isn't finished with this yet. We're going to stop there. But again, you can't. James really kind of runs homogeneously more than disjointedly. One thing leading to and building upon another. Sometimes the connections are a little more challenging to see. We talk about that. But I don't think James is bouncing around. I think he's systematically tackling this problem of the immature faith of some of the believers there. So our tongues are small, but they are powerful. They should not bless God and curse men. James doesn't provide a solution. He doesn't give us five steps or things to add to our prayer list, but he leaves us clearly understanding that this is not acceptable before the Lord. And so I'm going to